A whole gang of media snoopers, including Jonathan Marks, scans from D.C. to daylight every Thursday here on Radio Netherlands. Their super-duper whopper-doppler receiver gizmos pick out the essence of what's happening in the world of international broadcasting. Radio Netherlands, we have the technology.
Hello, this is Jonathan Marks for PCJ Online. Just about to push the button on another program from the media network Vintage Radio Archives.
And now this is Jonathan Marks at the microphone to present a rather special edition of Media Network for our listeners in the Pacific. On August the 6th, 1981, we were presenting a Media Network special on Indonesia when we lost the satellite link with our Bonaire relay station, and quite a few people wrote in to request that we repeat the programme. So the feature element of that programme is coming up soon. First, though, let me say thank you to the people in the Pacific who helped us out with the computer experiment. Letters are still coming in, and we're forming ideas as to how successful it was. But we've had people report now that they've got the programme to work after taping it from our Bonaire relay station. Now, Douglas Doole is a regular correspondent, and he says he heard Radio Korea in Seoul mention that one of their announcers was coming to the Netherlands to be with us for 12 weeks. Well, we can confirm she's arrived. In fact, she's sitting in the control room at the moment, watching chaos in action. Indeed, Douglas, I hope we can arrange an interview before she returns, because I know the broadcasting situation in Korea is quite fascinating. The receiver list is also proving very popular with listeners, more so in the Pacific, now that we've included prices in Australian dollars. F.R. Smith, who listens to us in the Central Pacific, says it's helped him to choose a new receiver, and the advanced market advice on the Media Network programme is also of interest. Well, our policy is to review new sets when they come onto the market, and we do that review only when we've seen the set ourselves. We're a non-commercial station, and we get the receiver on loan only. We don't keep it, so that our reviews aren't biased by personal preferences or even enticements. In fact, next week we hope to have a report in the programme about a firm in the UK that have been playing around with the Yaesu Musen FRG 7700 to upgrade it. They've put the price up, of course, and we hope to find out whether the improvements are worth the money. Back to computers. KW Glasgow in Curralee, Australia, and Rodney Norris of North Rocks, New South Wales, tried the computer experiment, but without success. Both report there was fading on the signal, which made the computer misread the signal. But, they wonder, can they obtain a listing of the computer program so they can enter the information at home and get the program to work? Well, the answer is yes. As well as offering a special QSL card for that transmission, we'll send out copies of the three programs that were transmitted in printed form. If the idea of computer programs for the DXer is of general interest to the shortwave listener, and the response indicates that might well be so, we might even push out a collection of the more useful programs as a publication. Let me say that we haven't done that yet, so there's no point in writing in for a copy, but if you're active in the computing program field, you've developed a program that you find useful, and you're willing to share it with us, why not send it in? Our address is simply this: Media Network, Radio Netherlands, Post Office Box 222, Hilversum, in Holland. Once again, that's Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, in Holland. And you can also phone our answering service at any time and leave a message, or comment, or even a suggestion. And here's some information on that. Hello there. Do you object to long, boring political commentaries? And do you find our interviews don't really say much? Well, now's your chance to take revenge. You can call us here in Hilversum, and we'll record your comments, suggestions and threats onto a piece of magnetic tape. And if it provokes the producer of our Tuesday listener contact programme enough, he might even use it in the programme. Call us now on this number.
3-1.
For Holland.
3-5.
For Hilversum, and then.
1-8. 7-0-0.
Precisely.
That number once again was 3-1 for Holland, 3-5 for Hilversum, 18-700. The tape machine will record your voice at 7.5 inches per second, so it's quite easy to use the material in the programme, either media network or shortwave feedback, if you give us your permission. And you can also use that number for last-minute news and tips, because the tape is checked very frequently. Finally, a reminder that we're looking for receiver price monitors and newspaper clippers to help us on the programme. If you'd be willing to pop down to the local electronics store and check the prices of some shortwave sets, the names of which we'll send you 4 times a year, we'd like to hear from you. The information will be used for our receiver shopping list, and those selected for the receiver price monitor panel will get their postage costs refunded. The other type of active listener we'd like to hear from is the newspaper clipper. It's a fact that New Zealanders and Australians know far more about Europe than the other way round, and this is simply due to the media. What we notice is that some rather interesting articles often appear in the Pacific press concerning radio that we miss here in Europe. If you see an article in the newspaper concerning radio, perhaps you can send it in. And that goes too for the many listeners on those beautiful islands in the Pacific. I know we get quite a number of letters, especially from the Cook Islands and Fiji. Now, if you live on those islands and your local radio station changes its schedule, its frequency or its power, this is usually mentioned over the air. It might seem rather trivial because it's only the local station after all, but to listeners as far away as we are, it could mean that this rare station, at least for us, has a chance of being audible. We'd also like to compile a series looking at radio stations on the Pacific Islands. If anyone listening now would be willing to record some of the station output heard on their island and perhaps assist us with a documentary, please get in touch, as we'd love to hear from you. Right, enough from me. Let's hand over now to the Media Network programme of August the 6th. A few weeks ago, we took an introductory look at radio in Indonesia, looking at the different types of stations that exist there, the Radio Republik Indonesia, the RRI stations, the RPD, or local government stations, and the Amatura, both licensed and illegal. In a moment, we'll look at the different types of music from the various islands, which are often a clue to where an unidentified signal may be coming from. But first, let me bring in my studio guest, John Campbell, who's a very keen listener to that part of Asia, to look at further sources of background reading. John, what do you recommend?
Okay, Jonathan, I think that there are two books that come to mind most readily as far as sources of information are concerned. The first one is, in my opinion, the best of the books which are mainly written for potential tourists to Indonesia, but which contains a great deal of information on the side, which DXers and listeners could use to understand regions. It's a book called Indonesia Guide, or Guide to Indonesia, or something very close to that, and the author's name is Bill Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N. Now, apart from the books written for the tourist, I think there's a very effective, but maybe not so well-known, two-volume series, whose author is Darcy Greenfield, which is published by a small but efficient outfit called the Oleander Press in Cambridge. The first volume of the series is concerned with Java and Bali, and the second volume with the rest of Indonesia. It's a fine mix of cultural information, possibly a little information of what the tourist is likely to want to know about, and information that could be of use to the DXer. There's even some references to radio stations in there. So I would say the books by Dalton and the two volumes by Greenfield are the ones to go for.
Right, and the exact title of the book by Bill Dalton is The Indonesia Handbook. It has 486 pages, and it's available in Europe through Roger Lascelles, and this is the address 16 Holland Park Gardens, London, W14 8DY in England. The price is £4.50, and an extra 90 pence for postage and packing for listeners in the UK. And the book number is ISBN 0804812683. Also, you might like the Southeast Asia on a Shoestring book by Tony Wheeler, published by Lonely Planet Publications, Box 88, Yarra, Victoria, 3141, Australia. Well, now, John, what about DX Publications?
I think there's one publication that really stands out when it comes to detailed Indonesian information, the last word in information about all of the small local shortwave stations. It's a regular, but maybe not all that frequent, publication of the Down Under DX Circle, which is devoted to Asian DX and specializes very strongly in Indonesia. The story there is that it isn't really a club, but it publishes this thing for the benefit of all people who are interested and can contribute at a high level to Indonesian DXing. Apart from that, there aren't too many DX club publications which give any kind of detailed coverage to Indonesia. The clubs just don't specialize geographically. But one that I can recommend, because it's quite close to Indonesia and will give you a fairly detailed rundown of RRI and similar station developments, is the Bulletin of the Union of Asian DXers. And I think, Jonathan, that you can easily spell out the address in more detail to the listeners.
Yes, indeed. Actually, the UADX recently produced a 10-page survey of African, Asian and Pacific stations, which includes quite a bit on Indonesian loggings. It's very up-to-date, costs 5 international reply coupons, and you can get a copy via Gerhard Verdin, Niederbecker Straße, number 43, 4000 Düsseldorf 30 in West Germany. Once again, that's Gerhard Verdin, that's W-E-R-D-I-N, Niederbecker Straße, N-I-E-D-E-R-B-E-C-K-E-R, Straße 43, 4000 Düsseldorf 30 in West Germany. Now, John Campbell mentioned the Down Under DX Circle, and we've got the secretary, Jeff Cozier, back on the telephone line now. Well, Jeff, on July the 16th, we were looking at Indonesian stations, both the RRI and the RPD type. Now, if you hear one of these two, when's the best time to listen out for a station identification?
Well, that's a very good one, because some stations appear to refuse to identify. You can listen to some stations for maybe an hour or two on end, and they just don't seem to think of giving an identification before or after the news or at any other time, and then you'll tune into a different station on a different night and discover that no sooner have you tuned in and they're giving a local news for the town, and you can hear the town name mentioned over and over again. But generally the best time to hear the full identification is just before one of the news relays, which are at 10, 11, 12, 13... 1400 or 1500 GMT.
Now, if you're going to write a reception report to these radio stations, first of all, are they aware of the shortwave listener outside?
Well, yes. It's a bit of a chicken and the egg type situation. Which comes first? The station, I don't think they are initially aware that they can be heard outside of Indonesia until they receive a reception report. And I think that just getting one letter from Australia or Japan or wherever, they suddenly realise that they can be heard quite a long way away. So they only really need the one reception report for them to know that their signal is capable of reaching other areas. But, of course, if one is seeking a verification from the station, there has been a trend in the past that the station will answer the first 3 or 4 letters and then they won't answer any more unless you've managed to get a letter to a different person at the station. Perhaps they get tired of sending off letters overseas. I'm not quite sure why, but they certainly are very interested in receiving the reports.
But you have to use a special technique, don't you? It's no good just writing in the SIMPO code. They won't follow that.
Oh, no, they wouldn't have the faintest idea on the SIMPO code. You would have to literally describe the signal. But, of course, the one problem there is that DXs tend to rate signals better than an average person. To a DXer, a signal is generally call very good or excellent if you can hear every word, even though the signal itself might be terribly weak. So one has to not give the station the impression that you listen to them every night as you would your local AM or FM station.
Do they know what international reply coupons are?
I don't think so. I think in the larger towns, such as Surabaya and Jakarta, they would, but in the smaller areas, I think it would be a waste of time sending them IRCs.
So what do? You have to rely on their goodwill?
Well, that's right. Or if you're fortunate enough to be in a position to obtain mint Indonesian stamps, one can send those off with their letters. But out of the Indonesian QSLs that I've received, it's only been in the last 12 months that I've been using mint stamps, and up until that time I'd probably verified perhaps 75 stations without using any reply postage at all. Mm. So one doesn't need to send reply postage, but in light that these stations are often fairly poor in Western terms, it is a nice touch to send a couple of stamps of the correct value for a reply to be made.
Well, if somebody wants more information about this type of DXing, I've just got a copy of your latest bulletin from the Down Under DX Circle, which has a whole list of loggings, not only from Indonesia, but also some in Indochina as well. Now, how can people get hold of this?
Well, that's simple. If they send six IRCs or $2 in cash, and I must stress that the $2 has to be in cash because otherwise we have a banking fee deducted, but six IRCs or $2, we'll get them an airmail copy. That's from anywhere in the world. If they are living in Australia or New Zealand, if they send 70 cents in Mint Australian stamps or three international reply coupons.
So that's six IRCs or $2 in cash for airmail anywhere in the world, except three IRCs or 70 cents in Mint Australian stamps for Australia and New Zealand only.
You can find out about the publications of the Down Under DX Circle by writing to the present secretary, Jeff Cozier, whose address is 7 Donald Road, Burwood, Victoria. 7 Donald Road, Burwood, Victoria, Australia.
And now let's look at the types of music you might hear on the stations. We did mention that Western pop music is now quite widely heard on the stations, but so is the traditional Indonesian folk music. It varies in sound from region to region. For example, in Java, the gamelan is a popular instrument, though styles vary. Take, for example, the gamelan and flute music from West Java. Now, compare that gamelan music with this style from Central Java. It might sound very similar at first, but Indonesian people can certainly tell the difference. There's yet another style of gamelan, perhaps the most popular with the tourists because it's the most lively. It's from the island of Bali. So, three different styles there. Now, to continue our musical tour, I'm joined in the studio by Slamet Pradyono, head of Radio Republik Indonesia, Ujang Pandang.
The province of Maluku, or the Moluccas, is nicknamed the Spice Island. It is a group of islands between Sulawesi and West Irian. The islands are mostly mountainous and densely forested, but Aru and Tanimbar groups are flat and swampy. The main islands are Halmahera, Obi, Sula, Seram, Buru, Ambon, Ternate, Tidore, Banda groups, and Weta. If you compare the gamelan music from Java and Bali with that from Maluku, certainly you will recognize that it is really very different. Perhaps the reason is that the population of these islands is of mixed descent. We will now continue our visits to South Sulawesi province, of which the capital city is Ujung Pandang. Now, listen carefully to its kecapi music. Kecapi looks like a mandolin. People in South Sulawesi always play their kecapi in moonlights in their villages, especially after harvesting. South Sulawesi is well known as the rice sedge of Indonesia. Sulawesi is one of the big islands of Indonesia. From the backbone of the islands, which runs north and south, three long peninsula project northeast, east and southeast respectively, the first being much the longest. These peninsulas form the great gulfs of Tomini, Tolo, and Bone. Ujung Pandang, the capital city of South Sulawesi province, is a developing city. The population is about 650,000 people. Tanah Toraja is a developing tourist center. West of this regency is called Polewali Mamasa. Here you can listen to the flute orchestra, generally played by school children. Further south of this region, we have another kind of music, the Gandrang Pakanjara, a specific drum orchestra in South Sulawesi. In festivals, 20 to 30 drum players attract attendance coming from various parts of the country. Now we will continue our travel to the north. Manado is the chief port and capital of North Sulawesi. It has also centers of population inland, on plateaus among the mountains, including a place called Tondano, near the lake and river of the same name. North Sulawesi has a specific Kulintang music. According to the 1971 census, the population of Kalimantan is 4,774,368. They include various racial groups: Malay on the southwestern and eastern coastal areas, Banjar on the southeastern coastal areas, Bugis, Bajau, Dayak, including the Punan, Kayan, Bahau, Kenya, Ot Danung, Iban, Kalimantan, Ngaju, Dusun, and Murut. Well, here is one of their music.
So, some idea of the music there. And now back to reception conditions. We've talked about reception in Asia, Europe and Australia, but what about North America? Bill Sparks is a well-known Indonesian listener in San Francisco, USA, and I asked him if there were particular seasons for good reception in that part of the world.
Yes, definitely. Under normal circumstances, when the sunspot count is not as high as it is at the present time, the winter season, December, January, and February, has always provided good reception up until as late as 1600 sign-off, especially from Java and Sumatra. For the past 2 years, however, reception conditions have changed greatly. Winter reception was very poor, and reception on 79 and 90 meters provided only very weak signals, or no signals at all, due to the high absorption rate, and weak signals on 60 meters. Actually, the only Sumatrans that I've heard the last 2 years with any regularity at all have been on Palembang on 48-56, Pekanbaru on 58-86, and Medan on 47-64. At the present time, the best reception has been during the spring and even into the summer months, March, April, May, June, sometimes into July and August. Then the reception has picked up on 90 meters and 75 meters. However, we've always been very poor on 120 meters as far as Indonesia is concerned.
Would you say the best band for a beginner is the 60-meter band to try?
60 meters plus some of the areas close to the 49-meter band. For instance, your best signals, I think, from Indonesia at the present time have been the Manokwari on 61-87 and Biak on 54-51. And Surrey Station on 6206. All three of those have been coming in fairly regularly, although Surrey has been very erratic and as far as being on the air concerned recently.
Do you find that the RRI stations tend to come in better than, say, the RPD local government stations?
Oh, very much so. Many of the RRI stations, you must remember, have 10 kilowatts, whereas your RPDs are all very low power with probably below 1 kilowatt in almost all cases. The one RPD station that I have been hearing regularly is Balungan on 2976. That has been putting in a fairly consistent signal. Between about 1130 and 1300 hours.
And it also helps to follow a little of the language. It's quite fascinating, actually, and not too difficult to learn a passable knowledge. Mr. Yosan of our Indonesian department is with me now. For in Indonesian, the plural is made by repeating the word. For example, gelombang means wavelength in Indonesian.
Indeed. And so you might hear a station mention gelombang-gelombang 60 dan 120 to say 60 and 120 meters.
So let's have a look at the numbers now. The numbers from 0 to 10 in Indonesian.
0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Number 11 is the odd one out, being pronounced as this.
11.
And then 12 to 19 are simply the numbers 2 to 9 with the prefix belas added. 20 is pronounced like this.
20.
And 21 is?
21.
30 is?
30.
In other words, the number 3, tiga, with the suffix pulu. And if you want 36?
36.
Now the days of the week, from Monday to Sunday.
Senin, Selasa, Rabu, Kamis, Jumat, Sabtu, Minggu.
And finally, the different time zones you might hear.
Indonesia bagian timur.
Which means East Indonesia time.
Indonesia bagian tengah.
Which means Central Indonesia time. And now,
Indonesia bagian barat.
Which means Western Indonesia time. So a few things to look out for. And perhaps it's whetted your appetite. If it has, then we have a new pamphlet for you, with a lot of extra details that we haven't had time to mention. It's called simply DXing Indonesia, and it's just come out, it's free of charge, and the address to write to is simply Media Network, Radio Netherlands, P.O. Box 222, Hilversum, in Holland. And the title was once again DXing Indonesia. Well, the technician is waving at me to say goodbye very quickly. So this is Jonathan Marks in Hilversum saying goodbye very quickly.
I've been doing some listening between 3 and 30 megawatts. It's, some people get static. Some people get far-off countries. I just get a headache.
Serving the universe from Flevo, Radio Netherlands, with relays in Russia, Bonaire, and Madagascar. Any questions?
And that's where we end this nostalgic trip back into the Media Network audio archives from 1981 to October 2000. If you find all this stuff interesting, you might want to explore the Critical Distance website, where you can find more vintage audio shows, but also peruse recent video interviews I've made in the course of my travels around the world. Some of the videos actually follow up on points raised in the Media Network programme. So zip over to www.jonathanmarks.com for more details. In the meantime, this is Jonathan Marks saying back soon. Bye for now.